You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, breeds of centipedes in tweed and in need of mead and a good read. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 252, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your old-style, old squaws and oldsters listening to oldish oldies.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
I have a surprise quiz. We're still going to do Pop Quiz Hotshot.
Oh.
Here's how it's going to work. You guys don't have to answer. I'm going to ask the question. Think about it and answer it in your head. Listeners, feel free to do the same. Maybe, you know, if you're in the privacy of your own home, you can like shout out what you think the answer is. Maybe write it down. Maybe if you're at work, you can like type it out in the notes app. For Chris and Colin, just think about it.
Okay.
So this is what I'm going to call the foreign foodie quiz. Okay. I just have a couple questions. Here we go. Just think about the answer. What do you call a big buffet in Sweden? a big display of food, big mm-hmm. buffet okay. in Sweden. All right, think about it. Mm-hmm. Okay, next question. What kind of small, bright orange pepper is hotter than a jalapeno? So it's not a jalapeno. Mm-hmm. It's a small, bright orange pepper. It's hotter than a jalapeno. Mm. Okay, next question. How do you spell latte, as in the coffee? How do you spell latte? More specifically, do you put an accent in latte? Next question. What kind of cheese is usually grated over pasta? What kind of cheese is usually grated over pasta?
Okay.
Last question. What do you call the Latin American half-circle pastry that's kind of like a turnover? And it's usually savory.
Had some for dinner. Had some for dinner tonight, in fact.
Really? Oh.
I did.
Put some chimichurri sauce on it.
Okay.
All right. Someone in our fan group pointed out in a recent episode, my bad, I mispronounced dachshund, the wiener dog, the sausage mm-hmm. dog.
Yeah.
I said dash hound.
That's kind of a Karenism. That's just kind of how you say it.
That's how I learned it, right?
Yeah.
I overly Americanized it. I looked at it. I was like, wow. Okay. How would an American person pronounce this? Dash hound.
We probably still get people mad listening to old episodes where I said Edinburgh instead of Edinburgh. That's how it goes. We Americanize things here maybe a little too much.
Occasionally. Yeah. It's like, I know it's Melbourne. we say Melbourne. But this led to a fascinating discovery. I found out on the other end of the spectrum, there is a phenomenon called hyperforeignism.
Oh, sure.
Which is when we, as English speakers, overly foreignify or overly embellish foreign loan words
right.
in English. Sometimes we know we're doing it, but most of the time we actually probably might not know that we're doing it. So, for example, we love the superstore Target. And it's a joke now for a long time that we mispronounce it on purpose, Target.
Right.
It's just a normal store, but you're like, ooh, I'm going to Target to make it sound fancy because it's not a fancy place. So we know we're doing it, that's for a comedic purpose. But there's some foreign loan words that we just, in our minds, overly foreignify because that's what we think what we should do. So let's go back to that quiz, the list of questions I asked earlier. It just so happens I got like food examples because most people know the food examples. So what do you call a big food buffet in Sweden?
All right. We're not gonna self-correct here, Chris. We're gonna go with the
Oh sure. I mean I would have
even
said
knowing that yeah. even knowing that we're setting ourselves up to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody either.
I would say smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord, yeah.
Yeah, so smorgasbord versus smorgasbord.
Oh, I see.
Pronouncing the SM smorgasbord, but adding a SCH or like adding SH, smorgasbord. What small bright orange pepper is hotter than a jalapeno? Habanero. Now, jalapeno has a tilde on the N.
Has the N-Y.
Right?
Yeah.
Jalapeno. Uh-huh. Habanero does not.
Ah.
Because we're very familiar with jalapeno. So we're like, oh, habanero, it probably also has the A as well.
I'm guilty of that. I would have said habanero. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Latte. L-A-T-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
No accent. No accent. There is an accent in the E if you say cafe latte in Italian. Starbucks is frappe. Has an accent on the E, but latte itself does not.
Oh, interesting. This reminds me, by the way, of the, I think it was either a TikTok or some sort of video of some guy, tourist in Italy, and goes around all the coffee shops asking for a latte. Can I have a latte? Can I have a latte? Can I get a latte? Not realizing, and after 3 days, he realized he's just been drinking milk. Whole time, he's been drinking hot, frothy milk the whole entire time because that's what he's telling him. He's like, give me milk. Not a cafe latte, a coffee with milk. Yeah,
I'm feeling great, real sleepy, but I'm feeling great though. Otherwise, yeah, a little gassy, but aside from that.
Oh, speaking of gas, what kind of cheese is usually grated over pasta?
Parmesan.
I mean, you're saying it right. Parmesan.
Ooh,
I said not, Parmesan.
It's not Parmesan.
Oh, it's not Parmesan.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I even misspell it, like S-E-A-N, Parmesan. But I said Parmesan, like the person Sean Bean. and then, okay, the last one, last example, the Latin American half-circle pastry, empanada.
the ghost tilde, basically.
The ghost tilde.
The ghost tilde.
Phantom tilde.
That's great.
Empanada. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's empanada. Hyperforeignism.
Yeah, that's a great term for that.
It's like we want to honor the origin of the word, but like honor maybe a little bit too far, a little bit too much. All right. Well, more quiz. Without further ado, let's jump into our second. Well, I guess whatever. General quiz segment. Pop quiz, hotshot. You guys have your barnyard buzzer. Chris is actually coming to us live from a hotel room, but he brought his buzzer with him.
Good man.
Can't forget that.
I have my random Trivial Pursuit card. This is just normal Trivial Pursuit. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. What was the first global radio navigation system that also shares its name with a luxury Swiss watchmaker?
Wow.
Global radio navigation system.
Chris.
Rolex.
No. But you're on the right track.
Yeah,
name
right?
Some brands. It is Omega. Omega.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Pink Wedge. Who was the only cast member in The Lord of the Rings to have actually met J.R.R. Tolkien?
Oh, wow.
Colin.
I'm going to guess that's Christopher Lee.
Yes! Oh, I thought I would have guessed Sir Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
All right, Yellow Wedge. What title did Camilla Parker Bowles receive following her marriage to King, now King Charles?
Yeah, outdated card.
In 2005. Colin.
Okay, so what did she get in 2005, right? Well, she was the queen consort, right? But that, I think that's outdated. So I got to pass. Chris knows.
Chris.
Duchess of Cornwall.
Yes!
Yeah, Chris knows.
Wall of Corn, Duchess of Cornwall.
My favorite thing on this show, when we both buzz in and I'm like, I know this. And then it's like, Colin. Well, let's see. I think that it's not.
Chris just laying in wait.
Like,
Chris is like, out of my way.
It's not the Duke of Earl.
It's not the Earl of Sandwich. Yeah.
That's not a hereditary title. That one's,
Okay, Purple Wedge. Which classic kids book took shape when its author was inspired by watching tiny spiders in his New York City apartment spin web after web? Chris.
Charlotte's Web.
Yeah.
Yes. Now let's see.
Yeah.
Okay. Who wrote Charlotte's Web? How about that?
E.B. White.
Yes, it is E.B. Okay. White. Green Wedge for science. Which product first sold in 1990 as the power drencher was invented by an engineer working on the Galileo mission to Jupiter.
Wow.
Colin.
I may have jumped the gun there. Apologies, Chris. I'm sure you know it. It must be the Super Soaker.
Yeah. Power Drencher.
Power Drencher is the name that you would have like in the writer's room when you had to come up with something for your show and you couldn't say Super Soaker, right?
It's the Safeway brand. Last question, Orange Wedge. What sensuous ballroom dance is called the Dance of Love? And was born in Buenos Aires in the 1870s. Chris.
I think that's the tango.
It is the tango.
Okay. I'm going to overthink this.
Yeah. Argentine tango. Good job, brains. Mm. Woo. Oh, actually, I have a fun basketball trivia fact that I learned from you, Colin, that I applied in the wild. A couple episodes ago, you asked what seemed like a really easy sports question that both me and Chris did not get. What basketball player is famous for missing all the free throws in one game?
Most misses without a make.
Yeah, most misses without a make. I think I guessed like Kevin Garnett. Chris said Basketball Jones.
Yes.
And then you're like Shaq. And it's like, oh my God, yes. But I learned it. It's in my head. My company's CEO was talking, you know, this is all through Zoom, and he used the analogy. He's like, there are companies who are really good at some things, and there's some parts where they're not as good. They can be celebrated in one area, but, you know, still have room for improvement for another area. He's like, just like a basketball player, you know, maybe someone who plays really well isn't good at free throws. And I was like, oh, this is my time. And I wrote in the Zoom chat, go, oh, like Shaq.
I'm so proud. I'm so proud of you. That's great.
Sure made an impression.
Yeah, they're like, yes, good, Taryn. That's right. Like Shaq. Yes, yeah. I wish all the rest of you could be as on the ball as Karen is here. Yeah.
Yeah. Karen, you're promoted.
Today's episode, I saw an article about in our minds, we have what age we think we are.
Oh, sure.
For some reason, I feel like I'm 27 all the time.
That's so funny that you say that. You know what, Karen? At one point, I remember talking with my mom before she passed away, and she told me that in her mind, she felt 27. That was like,
really?
She's like, yeah, this was, I mean, she was probably 70. And she said that like in her mind, she kind of just felt 27 for the rest of her life. So it's funny that you say that.
Do you guys feel like there's an age in your head younger than you are or older?
Right. I know what you mean. I would say for me, it's probably, yeah, like early 30s. I don't know. I don't know. 32, maybe something like that. The way you sort of perceive yourself.
I'm still a kid. I'm not really grown up. And it's like, what? I have kids now? Like, when did this happen? I still love Pearl Jam, you know?
Maybe I think that until I begin interacting with someone who is actually like 27.
Right,
and then I realize, like, my gosh, I'm so, so much older than you.
In honor of facing our mortality, I was inspired to have a topic on age and youth and youthfulness and being young and being 27 in your head all the time. So this week, when we were young.
I mean, that's marking you as being old.
What?
Hearing when we were young and thinking about the Killers. that's what an old person would think.
When
of.
Did that now, song come out?
People would think of Adele now with a song called, you know, When We Were Young.
Oh my God.
2003?
I searched When We Were Young and Killers doesn't even show up. It is, you're right. It's all Adele.
That's what I'm telling you. You're old now.
2006. That's, to me, that's not that 2006? Long ago.
It's a really long time. It's an incredibly long time ago.
Oh my gosh.
Kids were born when that album came out. Now they're
teenagers.
Doctors. Yeah. No, I don't know.
They're like
they're doctors. Doogie Howser.
They're operating on you.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So again, we're already sort of trending towards like, I don't want this show to turn into us bashing the young people. You know what I mean?
No.
So, exactly.
The children are our future, Chris.
So oh my gosh. Wow. I mean, I agree. I think that people are getting younger and younger these days. You know, I think that's great. So I think we should celebrate the achievements of the youth with a quiz that I would like to call How Young Were They? This is a write down closest to the pin quiz. Okay. So I am going to ask you how young the youngest person ever to do something impressive was. And you're going to take a stab at just guessing the age, at the age of the person. You're not telling me who the person was or anything like that. I'm going to say how young was the youngest person ever to blank. And you have to guess how young they were. Not talking about how old they were, how young they were. When they accomplish this. So I'll start it right off with the joke that I made earlier in the show, which is how young was the youngest person to pass the U.S. medical boards and become a doctor?
Oh.
How young was the youngest person to pass the U.S. medical boards and become a doctor? So just go ahead, write down an age that you think is the appropriate answer to this question, and we'll see who is the closest. How young was the youngest person ever to pass the boards and become officially in the United States of America a doctor?
Do they have to practice?
It's, I mean, this person went into the practice of medicine.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Colin says 14, Karen says 16. You guys are both thinking a little too Doogie Howser-ish, but not quite. It was 17. Bala Ambati was 17. He graduated from Mount Sinai School of Medicine in 1995, passed the U.S. medical boards, and became a doctor.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep.
Amazing.
A lot of child prodigies. All right, here's one for the athletes out there. You know, maybe you're not going to become a doctor at age 17, but, you know, how young was the youngest person to climb Mount Everest?
I wonder if they have rules for that now. Like, what if it was a baby in a backpack?
What if it was a baby in a backpack? Do you think somebody would do that?
I say no, that baby doesn't get credit. You're not burning.
You have to get that's this quiz. You have to figure out like, well, what is the story? You know,
Well, for the doctor one, I was like, man, if it's U.S., like, I feel like they won't let anybody practice maybe until they're 18, but they can get credited before.
Yeah, I went through the same process. All right.
Karen says 9. Colin says 11. Again, you're very confident about these children. I will tell you that it is. The answer is 13, which is still very young. Jordan Romero of California, USA, was just 13 years old when he summited Mount Everest in 2010. Yep. Accompanied by his parents, accompanied by several Sherpas. That's
extreme.
Everybody.
No joke.
Was not. No, it is not. No, it is not a joke. You know what also isn't a joke? How young was the youngest person ever to travel to space? Space also not a joke. How young was the youngest person ever to travel to space?
I bet they're not American.
I that's kind of where my mind went to.
Youngest person ever to travel to space. Wow, both Colin and Karen guess 19. You are both the same distance away from the correct answer.
Thanks.
The correct answer is actually 18. So you're both very close on this one. Oliver Damon, a Dutch student, was 18 years old when he traveled aboard the Blue Origin space tourism flight.
That's so recent.
In 2021. Yes. This technically was he did go to space. He left the Earth's atmosphere and was in outer space. But it was a suborbital mission. Trivia, the youngest person ever to actually like fly in Earth's orbit was Soviet cosmonaut German Titov. He was 25 years old when he went up in 1961.
Okay.
I was kind of thinking maybe somebody,
Was
a Soviet cosmonaut. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, it was until the new age of space tourism, where you can go to space if you are very rich. How young was the youngest person to graduate from college with a bachelor's degree? This is a person who graduated from an accredited university in the United States of America with a bachelor's.
Do you have the school?
Sure. The school is the University of South Alabama. I'm sure that did not help you in any way.
No.
Karen says 13. Colin says 13. The youngest person ever to graduate from college with a bachelor's degree was Michael Kearney of Honolulu, Hawaii, who was 10 years old when he got his bachelor's degree in anthropology from the University of South Alabama in 1994.
Good job, brain.
He was the most child he's still alive. He's the most child prodigies of child prodigies.
Yeah, he's only like 40. What do you mean he's still alive? Yeah.
Michael Kearney apparently was talking at 4 months. When he was 6 months old, he went to the doctor and he told the doctor, he's like, I have a left ear infection. when he was 6 months old. He just sort of took off like a rocket. He's gotten several degrees since then. I mean, at 14 he got his master's degree.
My goodness.
How young was the youngest person ever to win a competitive Oscar? Not talking about Shirley Temple with the special juvenile award that they just gave to her, didn't even consider any other children who might have been nominated. The kids battle it out.
You're talking about age at which award was handed to the person.
Yes. Age at which Oscar was put in this person's hand. Yes, that's right. Okay. That's right.
All right.
Yep. How old? Karen says 11. Colin says 10. Colin nails it right on the beanbag with 10
Anna
years
Paquin?
Old. And Colin, I bet you know who it is. It's not Anna Paquin.
I believe it is Tatum O'Neill.
It's Tatum O'Neill. Paper Moon in 1974. Still has not been toppled. Anna Paquin was, I believe, 9 years old when she filmed The Piano, but she was 11 years old when she accepted the Best Supporting Actress Award. But let's stick with award shows. How young was the youngest person ever to win a Grammy? Again, still a competitive award.
We had this somewhat recently.
I know who it was. I don't know how old she is.
Okay. Well,
maybe together we can.
Then you got to take a stab at it and see. Karen says 9. Colin says 9. Again, you're both 1 year off. It was 8 years old. Does anybody want to say who it was?
Blue Ivy Carter?
Not Blue Ivy Carter. She did win a Grammy.
Wasn't it one of the sisters who on like the soundtrack for Oh Brother Where Art Thou, right?
There you go. That's as close as anybody's gonna get. Yes, excellent work. Leah Pizol of the Pizol sisters was eight years old when she became a Grammy winner for her work on the soundtrack album to Oh Brother Where Art Thou. That's right, alongside her two older sisters.
So she won as a performer?
She did. Yeah. They essentially, the Grammy was awarded to their group. So I mean, she as a member that group is considered a Grammy winner. Yep. Let's see. How many more do we have here? A couple interesting ones. Okay, here we go. So how young was the youngest person ever to win the Nobel Peace Prize?
I think, again, I know who it is. I don't know how old she was, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ooh.
All right.
Colin says 14. Karen says 16. The answer is that Malala Yousafzai was 17.
When
she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014 for her work in human rights advocacy. Yes. So she was 17 years old. That is the youngest person. I believe that is the youngest Nobel laureate period ever. Also, no 17-year-olds have won in physics yet, you know, but, you know, could happen. How young was the youngest person ever to become president of the United States of America? It's not 17, and it's not 10.
So now there's a rule. I feel like maybe before then there wasn't a rule. There wasn't an age requirement in the old days when people were practicing dentistry and being a lawyer at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And just being the president on like, as a side hustle. Yeah.
You know, I always hear it's JFK, but like, I think maybe, I don't know. I think maybe there's an
A little rub here in how Chris worded this question, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. Karen says 30. Colin says 40 and has written down TR question mark. So yes, Colin has kind of gotten what I'm getting at. John F. Kennedy was the youngest person ever elected president of the United States. He was 43 years old when he was elected president of the United States, but Theodore Roosevelt was just a wee little baby of just 42 years of age when he became president following the assassination of William McKinley. So Theodore Roosevelt at 42 is the youngest person to ever become president of the
United States. Oh, so that's how you word it, is become.
Of America. Become president of the United States of America, not be elected president.
That was closer than I thought. I thought he was a couple years younger than Kennedy. That was really close, though.
It is very close, isn't it? Yeah. Yep. So just one more question for you all. Okay. Here we go. How young was the youngest Olympic medalist? Now I'm gonna qualify and say we're talking about the modern Olympic Games. Okay. I am not going to say that some kid in the year 901
documented.
It's not modern. Hercules. It's how young was the youngest Olympic medalist in the modern Olympic Games? Right. Yep.
There's so many disciplines. There's so many disciplines where like you can just totally imagine that age is not necessarily a blocker.
Oh, you went young.
I did.
Karen says 13 and Colin says 10. Colin is right.
What?
It is 10.
Ooh.
So are you ready for this one? Demetrios Loundris was 10 years and 218 days old when he represented Greece in the team parallel bars, earning a bronze medal. Did not say gold medalist. He earned a bronze medal in the team parallel bars in the 1896 Summer Olympics. The first modern Olympic Games. Demetrios Loundris died in 1970 as the last surviving participant of the first modern Olympic Games.
Wow, because he was so young then.
Old. He got the bronze medal.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Isn't that great?
Wow.
All right.
I know. Well,
congratulations.
Yes. Congratulations to Demetrios and everybody else. You did it.
Malala. Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt.
I like how Teddy Roosevelt's in there at 42.
Yeah.
42. Yeah.
Yeah, this young go-getter. Yeah.
All right. I also have a quiz. I here have a quiz about the fictional world of delaying aging. These are questions about books, TVs, movies. This is a buzz-in quiz, so get your barnyard buzzers. Delayed aging in fiction. Here we go. So all this first section are about characters who are immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. First question. In the Pirates of Caribbean series, Davy Jones was cursed with immortality and looking like an octopus. His whole crew was cursed too. What was the name of their ship?
Oh, Lord.
Colin.
The Dreadnought.
No, it is the Flying Dutchman. The mythical, which actually recently I just saw a possible explanation about out at sea. There's this optical illusion phenomenon with like the reflection of water that makes ships look like they're floating.
Sure. Yeah. Air.
And so, maybe that's, you know, kind of these like legends kind of was born out of that.
Yeah,
all right. Next question. This character served as a captain in the American Civil War, then was transported to Mars and became an immortal warrior.
Whoa. Gosh.
This character served as a captain, American Civil War on the Confederate side, then was transported to Mars. Colin,
it's from the Burroughs, right? From the Barsoom. It's what it was like. John, help me out here, Chris. Like they made it. It was John.
Just John.
No idea.
John something. I know you know this. They tried to make a big blockbuster out of this, and it flopped.
Chris.
John Carter.
Yes, John Carter.
Thank you.
Mars of Edgar Rice Burroughs, also the author of a Tarzan. Yes.
Yeah.
Vampires are famously immortal. One of the most famous vampires in modern literature is Anne Rice's Lestat from Interview with a Vampire movies and books, and also like the Vampire Chronicles. Lestat. What is Lestat's last name?
Oh, jeez.
He has a last name.
Oh, man.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Chris.
Dracula.
Lestat de Lioncourt.
Yes.
De Lioncourt.
Yes.
Literally never heard that in my life. Should I read that book? It's like the first, because she's written 1 million of these books, but like it's the first book, The Interview with the Vampire, like is it good? Should I read it?
Yeah, I think it was fun. I mean, I remember it was a long time ago, like in college. I had a bunch of friends who had read it. It was fun. I mean, you could read it very quickly.
The other kind of vampire literature is from so long ago. Anne Rice really gave more flavor to the vampire mythology than just like Dracula.
Right.
All right. Next chapter, next segment. This is all about finding an object that grants immortality. So here we go. This Ron Howard film stars Don Ameche, Wilford Brimley as seniors who stumble across a swimming pool that makes their bodies younger. Colin.
That is, of course, Cocoon.
It's been a while since I watched that movie, but I watched that movie as a kid and I thought it was awesome.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, speaking, of course, of the aging episode, right? Oh. Karen, you are, of course, aware Wilford of the Brimley? Internet, the Wilford Brimley line, right?
A famous Twitter account congratulating other celebrities when they hit certain age, which was the same age as Wilford Brimley when he starred in Cocoon.
Right, which is
young.
He was 50. Wow. Like, I mean, like, you know, old man Wilford Brimley, like that
senior citizen.
He was 50 years, 9 months, and 6 days. And
that's
so
crazy.
Yeah, that's when you cross the.
That's like Keanu Reeves now. Yeah. All right. Next question: immortality object. Who exclaimed that he would sell his soul for his painting to age in his place? Chris.
Dorian Gray.
Yep. And the portrait of Dorian Gray. In Chinese mythology, the Monkey King steals this type of fruit from a tree that grants immortality. This fruit has long been a symbol of long life. Here's a hint. You might see it in a bun or a bao form if you go eat dim sum. It's kind of a dessert shaped like this fruit. I know in Japanese mythology there's a kid that gets born out of it.
Oh, okay.
Chris.
The peach.
Okay. The peach. Long life, longevity. Yes.
Interesting.
Monkey King steals the peach from the garden in the heavens.
Yeah. Represents butts.
Long life and butts. This 1975 children's novel by Natalie Babbitt is about a family who inadvertently drank from the fountain of youth. Chris.
Tuck Everlasting.
Yes!
Oh, have not read that.
It's one
of
that
school.
I hate school reading. Usually required school reading is like big downers like where the red fern grows, you know, or like,
right. I shot my dog the other day.
yeah. Or another, oh, it was a book about like the Iditarod or some sort of like race.
Snow dog dies.
My teacher was reading it out loud and he was crying. And I was like, why are we keep reading these books about dead dogs? Oh, finally, a book about a family that drank from the Fountain of Youth. Yeah. All right. This last section is on suspended animation, your cryo freeze, your cryo sleep, your preservation, very handy plot tool.
For sure.
My all-time favorite show, as you know, is Futurama / Futurama. Features the main character, Philip J. Fry, who gets accidentally frozen, wakes up in the year 3000. The show's creator is, of course, Simpsons creator Matt Groening. How many TV animated shows did Matt Groening create?
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
I feel like it's not going to be two.
Animated TV series, Colin.
Four.
It is three. Magic number three, guys. Always guess magic number three.
Oh. I could name three, and then I was thinking there must be one I was forgetting. And so I was trying to like add.
The third one is Disenchanted on Netflix. All right, next question. Sleeping Beauty and her kingdom got to delay aging as they fell into deep sleep because of a curse. In the 1959 Disney film, what was Sleeping Beauty's name?
Oh. Wow.
Chris.
Aurora.
Yes, Aurora. Aurora. Okay, last question here. In 1997, who peed for 3 hours after being thawed from cryo freeze? Colin.
Yeah, is that Austin Powers?
Yes, Austin Powers. Some works of fiction address maybe the physical problems of cryo sleep or cryo freeze, you know, being disoriented. And of course, Austin Powers peed for 3 hours, which makes sense.
Doesn't make sense. It's not like you just build up water the whole
time. That's true. That's true. Bladders will like burst.
Yeah, it's not proportional to how long you're sleeping. Yeah.
I don't want to wake up and poop.
All right. And we're just going to need to fit on your cryo diapers here. I'm sorry. My what now? Yeah.
Related to this big news, the remains of a 30,000-year-old Arctic ground squirrel was just discovered preserved in ice. You know when dogs do the like the cinnamon roll sleeping, like the squirrel is like cinnamon roll sleeping position. You can see the fur; it's brown red fur. Wow. You see the little claws.
Now that you say it, that's how old I feel. When you're like, "How old do you feel on the inside at the top of the show?" I feel like a 30,000-year-old ground squirrel curled up into a little ball.
Oh. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles. Smart trivia. Good job, brain.
Colin, you're looking for something.
The topic of the episode got me thinking about the many, many things we learned in school growing up that have since turned out to be somewhere on the misleading to outright baloney scale. Something's fall in there. I mean, I'm not just talking about like stuff like Pluto used to be a planet, right? I mean, it was legitimately a planet when I was a kid. It's no longer a planet. I'm talking about false sort of lazy histories of parts of our very own country. I remember learning as a kid the sort of the thumbnail version of the history of Florida, the great state of Florida, which was that, I'll do some fill in the blanks here, guys. You help me out. All right. Okay, Florida was discovered, quote, by
Ponce de Leon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And further, I was told that at least in part, Ponce de Leon was searching for
the fountain of youth.
So, yeah, I mean, people believed a lot of kind of out there things in 1513. I mean, they didn't really have like the germ theory of disease then, you know? I mean, it's like, I can plausibly see that maybe some people believe there was a fountain of youth. Juan Ponce de Leon was indeed a notable Spanish explorer, conquistador, colonizer. As I say, his expedition did in fact make the first verified official landing of a European crew in Florida. But okay, was he really, 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 really looking for the Fountain of Youth? Even if it wasn't like number one on his list, I'm like, was it like somewhere on the
top
list?
Top five.
Yeah, top five. You know,
I would say gold would be up there.
It is not going to surprise you to hear that in the 1500s, the Spanish Empire was quite keen to get its hands on as much gold and or territory as it could. I mean, in the so-called New World. All right, where did the Fountain of Youth, how did it work its way into the Ponce de Leon sort of origin story, if you will? I will tell you, and I hope I'm not disappointing you, there is no real Fountain of Youth. They didn't find it. At age 19, speaking of high achievers here, at age 19, Ponce de Leon, in 1493, he was one of more than 1,000 people, sailors, colonists, soldiers, who were on Columbus's second visit to the New World.
Oh!
1493, right? I mean, Columbus was there. Hey, found everything, went back. As you probably remember, again, we learned in school that Columbus was, you know, largely bankrolled by the Spanish crown. So this was his second visit. Ponce de Leon, many other people joined on board, went back. He did eventually land, after a few stops, on what is today Puerto Rico. He kind of set to work, you know, making his name and making his life. By the early 1500s, he was serving as governor of Puerto Rico, you know, installed by the Spanish crown. So he really got to work. And I mean, let me be clear. Let me be very clear here. He was not a sweetheart or a soft touch kind of guy. In fact, part of the reason that he climbed sort of the ranks quickly was that he was very good at conquering and colonizing. He was involved in some very kind of brutal treatment of the Taino people there. As kids, certainly, sometimes you see these little cartoon smiling pictures of the conquistadors in the margins of the books. Nope. I think we know enough these days to know that that's certainly not the rosy picture that was going on. By 1513, he was tasked with sailing out to explore a little bit. All right, now, so let's just pause there. All right. There are a lot of legends around the world of healing waters and magical springs.
Okay.
And this is not necessarily a unique folk motif. But in that region, that according to the legends and the tales, some of the native peoples in Cuba, in Puerto Rico, various places, there were stories of a mythical land, a magical land that may have gotten mixed in perhaps with some of these magical water motifs. And this mythical land was called Bemini or Benini, which we believe was the source of the name Bemini. It sort of became a stand-in for some of these magical stories about mythical places and magical lands. There is no evidence whatsoever that Ponce de Leon was interested in a Fountain of Youth, cared about a Fountain of Youth, heard about a Fountain of Youth. However, he did have a royal charter to go discover this land called Benini, which eventually became modern-day Bemini. But what happened over the years is writers, successive writers, writing about Ponce de Leon sort of fell into this common pattern. There were several writers who all sort of said, here's Ponce de Leon, here's what he did. Some people think he was looking for the Fountain of Youth, but I certainly, for one, don't think that. And this sort of got repeated and repeated and repeated, almost like just comically, writer after writer, like, I don't really think this was happening, but some people say. And by the time, you know, I was a kid learning about it in school, it had sort of just gotten enshrined.
He was doing this.
Legend. Yeah. He was there searching for the Fountain of Youth, and oh, hey, just happened to discover Florida.
It's a much better reason than saying he was out looking to conquer territories and killing people.
Yes.
He's looking for the magical water.
That's right. Totally.
What a fantasy.
Yep. It's a much, just very sanitized, much cleaned up version of the story. You're totally right. There's no direct evidence that he had this anywhere on his list. It was not 3. It was not 5. It was not top 10. It was nowhere on his list. Now, so it kind of answered a little bit of a question there. Like, yeah, I got a little bit of baloney as a kid. If you go to Florida today, I don't know, Karen, maybe you've run a marathon. Have you ever been to St. Augustine, Florida?
No, but I've heard of it.
All right. So yeah, if you go to St. Augustine, Florida, there is a place called the Fountain of Youth Archaeological Park. Now, for many years, this park billed itself as the real location of the well that was discovered by the Spanish conquistadors, nay, by Ponce de Leon himself in 1513. And this is what he believed to be the Fountain of Youth. This is a real park. It's a real place. If you grew up in Florida, you may have, you know,
but
gone
he's
there
dead, so
trip.
Obviously he didn't find it.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. There are varying descriptions of what exactly the Fountain of Youth was.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like on its most extreme description, it was, you know, an old man could take a bath in the Fountain of Youth and emerge, you know, rejuvenated, able to father more children. And
father more children.
Other accounts are it just cured your illnesses and just, you know, or just maybe just made you feel good.
So it's like, wait, you get down there, like, wait, do I drink it? Because that old man just got in here.
Yeah.
And he fathered a lot of children. Yeah. I don't want to go in there.
Back to St. Augustine, Florida. So I got to tell you guys about Luella Day McConnell, or Diamond Lil. Luella Day McConnell, Diamond Lil, she was a physician. And in the late 1890s, she moved from mainland America up to the Klondike, in fact.
Oh.
She made her fortune there. By the early 1900s, she had returned from the Yukon. She and her husband, they had arrived in St. Augustine, Florida, from the Yukon, wearing fur coats, jewels, and a diamond-studded tooth, front tooth, hence the name Diamond Lil. They bought a big parcel of land in St. Augustine on which they had this fountain. Luella was a hustler. There is no question. Luella Diamond Lil was a hustler. She started selling, quote, youth water from this little fountain on the property. All right. And eventually started charging admission, turned it into a park. She at one point uncovered a stone cross in the ground that apparently she claimed was tied to the Ponce de Leon landing party. This is all bunk. I mean, none of this is real.
Yeah.
But I mean, just grade A, early 1900s, just American kind of hucksterism. And so this place became like a landmark. I mean, like in pretty short period of time. And Diamond Lil just was a fixture in St. Augustine. Things were going great. She was building up her empire. She died in 1927. Apparently, she drove her car into a ditch. It's a little sad. And that was the end of the Diamond Lil. I mean, it's one of these things, like these people, just these huge, big lives. I mean, she's a physician and, you know, she moves to the Klondike and makes her fortune.
She's got
and comes
a diamond in her mouth and everything.
Yeah, and then she just
so well.
So the park, you know, has changed hands, obviously.
Is it still there?
Karen, it's not only still there, it is a local landmark, Fountain okay. of Youth Archaeological Park in St. Augustine. Like, I guarantee you, we have some listeners listening, like, I've been there, I went there with my class or my family or whatever. As it turns out, real bona fide archaeological expeditions have, in fact, uncovered artifacts and evidence that the site of this park is truly... No! On top of one of, if not the first sort of modern settlements in St. Augustine, Florida. So in its own way, did sort of come to have a legitimate historical claim to okay. Florida history.
How convenient.
How convenient, yes. Despite Diamond Lil's overbilling, maybe.
Wow, yeah, she was yeah. right.
She was certainly right in her vision of a successful park in Florida. Yeah, so you can go there. You can visit it today. It's on like lists of, you know, things to do if you're in St. Augustine.
Now they can actually call it an archaeological park.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't until like the 1970s that they really started, you know, in earnest, like these real expeditions. Yeah, so it had, you know, many years of pseudo history, and then definitely has come into real, some real history. Yeah, it's a long way to go from California, but if I am out there, I do promise I will take a detour and check this place out.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mystery of Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
Okay, guys, last segment. It's time to rip the Band-Aid. Here we are, facing our own age. With my quiz, current teen slang.
Oh,
current
no.
teen oh, no. slang. No, come on, it'll be fun. I promise. Okay, I've even recruited real teens to help me verify this quiz because it was kind of sad and desperate that I was Googling some of this stuff.
Right.
We're in a weird age because we have kids, but our kids are very young. I feel like if our kids are teenagers, we'd probably be more connected to like yeah. the language of the youth. Uh-huh. But it's just yeah. our kids are younger. But we do work in youngish skewing tech industries where we do encounter not only younger people as coworkers, but like communities and such. It's a write down quiz. Please have your paper and pen ready. I'm going to give you a term. You're going to tell me what you think it means. It's important to give where credit is due because a lot of the youth slang, these terms, they're borrowed from other cultures, like minority communities, black vernacular, fringe and specialty groups like gaming, fan/stan culture. Here we go. First word, bussin. That is B-U-S-S-I-N, bussin. What do you think bussin means? All right, answers up. Chris, what do you think it means?
Good, delicious, high quality.
Colin says good, good energy. Both correct. Chris is closer. Bussin does have a food kind of related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This steak is bussin. Next word, cap. C-A-P, cap. You can say cap or you can say no cap. What does cap mean? All right. What do you think it is?
I said like lie, kidding, joke.
Holding back, like restricting.
Well, I'm going to give it to Chris. It is lying. Cap is lying.
Okay.
And
okay.
when you say no cap, it is for real. The theory I read is teeth capping.
Oh, it's not false teeth.
Oh, okay.
So no cap means like, oh, my teeth are bare. It's real.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm giving it to you straight.
Heather. Heather. H-E-A-T-H-E-R. Heather.
Hmm.
It's funny because I think when we were younger, we also had Heather as a slang as well.
Hmm. Yeah, we did.
All right. Chris says street drugs.
Yes. Where can I score some Heather?
That sounds really good.
Colin says white or uncool. Ooh, it's the complete opposite. Heather is a beautiful, admirable person you aspire to.
Okay.
Our 80s Heathers is like popular.
Or like Mean Girls. Mean. Yeah.
Yes. Heather, this stems from a Conan Gray song. Teen heartthrob and musician has a song called Heather, and that's where it came from. All right. What does it mean when someone says bet? B-E-T. Bet. And I'm going to say this is not an acronym or abbreviation. This is like, are they gambling? All right, Chris, you said, let's do it. It's on. Colin says, believe it. Watch. It is. Yes, it is confirming. It's on. I heard you. I'm confirming what you just said. It's kind of the equivalent of if you're working in the kitchen, people say heard to give a call and response. Be like, yes, I heard you.
Roger.
Roger. Exactly. Okay. Next one. Chuggy. Chuggy. Can I have the spelling of that word? It is C-H-E-U-G-Y. Chuggy. I had to look up the syllable emphasis. Chuggy. Not
choy-gy.
Yeah. Chris says cringe. Colin says funky. Chris is actually doing pretty well. It's try hard. So there is a, cringe.
Okay.
Someone who's trying too hard.
Okay. All right.
Next one. Next term. Mid. Mid. M-I-D. Am I mid? Am I a mid? Do I wear a mid? Do I eat a mid? Chris says mediocre, middling. Colin, average. Yes, you're correct. Unremarkable. Undesirably average. All right, two more. Take several seats. Take several seats.
Wow.
What happens when you take several seats? What happens when you tell someone take several seats? All right, answer is up. Oh, okay. Well, let's. Chris says, listen. And then Colin, please stop talking. You are very wrong. Yes, that's exact.
Take several seats.
Calm down, chill out, shut up. because you are out of line.
And it's like, it's more than just take a seat. It's like, no, please take several seats. Yeah.
Yes, because you're so out of line. All right. Last one. You guys are doing so good. don't you feel good?
I'm glad we're not just outright embarrassing ourselves here. At least one of us is getting closer to it on each one. I'll take it.
Well, and also, like, I mean, these terms are not that wild. Do you know what I mean? They're not that
they
random.
They come from
like
somewhere. Right.
They come from somewhere. They're short for something. Mm-hmm. You know, it is figure outable.
For old men, Chris and I are relatively online too, so it trickles up a little bit.
For my job, I used to feel like I had to really understand like youth culture. So what I would do is I would go on YouTube and I would listen and watch music videos of what teenagers listen to. last one, here we go. Last one. Not to be confused with what we grew up with, I want to know what you think "op" means. OPP. We had our own OPP growing up. This is not the same. This is not the letters OPP.
Oh, okay.
This is op. Plural is ops. OPP or OPPS. Op or ops. All right. So Chris says opportunity. Colin says opportunities. Oh, so close. It is opposition or opponent.
Oh.
Maybe you play sport and you go in game. You're like, whoa, a lot of ops here, right? A lot of opposition. Yeah, opponents.
Well, there
Good
we go.
Good job, brains.
Woo! All right.
Thank you. I will not name my teenager help, but thank you.
Thanks, teens.
How do you do, fellow kids?
All right. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys for listening and hope you learned stuff about Ponce de Leon, very high achieving young people, about immortality and fiction. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like All Creatures, History Tea Time, and Tumble, the science podcast for kids. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.